Welcome to Designed for More, brought to you by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Join Dr. Timothy Jennings, a renowned expert in psychiatry, neuroscience, and spiritual well-being, as he explores the connections between mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Hello, and welcome to Design for More, sponsored by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. I'm Dr. Tim Jennings, joined today by Daniel Rome, one of our therapists, and Pastor James Johnson, our chief of chaplains. And we're going to be talking today about overcoming burnout. Do you see patients often with burnout, or is burnout something that happens? I mean, we're not even talking about patients, we're talking about people.
All
of us are vulnerable to burnout.
Yeah. Yes.
So what are your recommendations? What kind of things can we help our audience with?
Well, let's start by defining burnout.
Thank you, because
I
want to get a good working definition.
Because we've got psychological burnout. There's maybe in a spiritual ministry sense. Then I'm also wondering what's happening neurologically or in the brain with burnout from your perspective. But my understanding is it's when you've pushed yourself beyond healthy limits over a long period of time, neglecting things that you need to stay healthy. And then eventually it gets to the point where you can't ignore what is happening in your mind anymore.
So
either you get sick or...
So burnout is not a clinical term.
Right.
It's a layperson's term.
Right.
So there's no diagnosis burnout.
Right.
So burnout, though, in my understanding, the meaning, what people mean when they say burnout, is exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
It's exhaustion. I'm burned out. I don't have any more to give. My energy reserves are gone. I'm collapsing, basically.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Now, burnout can lead to depression. Oftentimes, it can lead to depression and discouragement. But depression is not burnout.
Right.
So burnout, and then when we think about burnout, I think we are primarily thinking of the emotional drain and exhaustion, more so than the physical. But we're integrated beings, and to the degree that we lose physical health, then we're more vulnerable to burnout. To the degree we maintain physical well-being, we have more energy, more resilience, so we're less vulnerable to burnout. But burnout is that people use the term burning the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear it, have you heard that term?
Yeah.
What do you understand people to mean by that?
Well, it's the candle's brighter, right? It's doing more, but then at the same time, when it runs out, you get burned.
So it burns at both ends. It's being used up faster.
Yep.
So I'm using up my reserves. I am both ends of a life would be I'm working night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Work life, personal life, everything's stressful. So I'm trying to do everything all the time, go to school full time, be a parent, have a job.
There's nowhere I can be off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm always on.
Yep.
So overcoming burnout would be first to look at one's life.
Yeah.
And identify, hey, is life not giving you reset, rest time? God designed for us to have one day in seven for sabbatical, Sabbath, which is not one day in seven to work harder in your worship routines. It's one day in seven to rest.
That's right.
It's a mental, spiritual rest. And I've seen in my practice a lot of people with burnout because they're hardworking, conscientious people.
Yeah.
Hardworking, conscientious people. And they've got family and they've got kids and they're working a job and they all week long not only have their jobs and they have the kids to this program and that practice and this thing, and then on the weekends it's time to catch up on the yard work and the laundry and the housework and it's just constantly 7 days gone, and there's no time for rest. And so one aspect to help prevent for burnout is to step back and establish the priorities that are required, the objective reality priorities that are required for an individual to maintain their health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
To go to your life, before you look at the responsibilities, you look at your ability to maintain your wellness. What's the second of the greatest commandments? The greatest is love the Lord your God, but the second is?
Love your neighbor.
As yourself.
Yes. Oh, don't. And that as yourself is not selfish. It's you have a responsibility to love yourself. That means care for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you aren't actually caring for yourself and you burn out,
then you can't love others appropriately.
Thank you. And this is one of the devil's strategies. If he can't get good people to do evil, mm-hmm. then he wants to overwhelm them with so much good that they can't keep up with it and they burn out. And then he takes them off the playing field and they have to be cared for by others. And so one of the first ideas in my understanding is to help people avoid burnout or deal with burnout is to establish what are those routines? How many hours of sleep minimum for an adult, 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night? And those hours are blocked off except in real life circumstances, emergencies, and or early parenting. Mm-hmm. Where that baby has to be cared for. But then, and this is an area where women often will hit burnout, it's in the postpartum period where they're not getting their sleep and they've got all those extra duties and responsibilities and they don't have good help.
Exactly.
And so I've counseled many of my patients who became new moms to make an affirmative plan for several nights a week, at least, I tell them at least two, but you could do more, at least two nights a week where somebody else will get up. You use a breast pump, put the milk in the freezer or the fridge, and somebody else gets up in the night and feeds the baby and changes the baby. It could be the husband, could be mom, it could be mother-in-law, could be sister, could be a nanny, but somebody else at least two nights a week is coming in where you can get your sleep two nights a week.
Yeah, and two is minimum because if parents are sharing responsibility, then...
Sometimes it's not possible. Husband is working, you know, he works on the road. He's only home two days a week and he's working the road. So it's not always possible. Or sometimes just single moms and can't do it. But the idea is to affirmatively work to the best of your ability to have that sleep because that's a very vulnerable time.
Mm. Absolutely.
But anyway, so this idea of healthy life routine, sleep, Sabbath rest to decompress from life's responsibilities. And I tell my patients, because conscientious people, and when they understand the Sabbath commandment, it can give them this freedom because conscientious people will often feel guilty if they're not getting the yard work done. I've got duties and my duties need to be done. I have to get this unless they realize that they're honoring God. This is a time where I'm free not to study, do my house, my schoolwork, my housework, my homework. All I'm free, and there's no guilt in leaving it to tomorrow. And that's actually because if you avoid the work but you're feeling guilty or pressured, that's actually not restorative rest.
Here's actually a question on that is, and this is a trap I fall in, is then I've taken the time and now I'm ready to rest. And then I'm like, okay, how do I rest the right way? Because there's media, there's TV, there's these different things that feel like you're able to turn off, it's not good for you.
Theatrical.
And so how do you engage in rest in a way that's actually restorative, but you're not still working somehow?
Pastor, what would you like to say on that?
Well, you know, one of the things that is I guess there's two sides of it that I think are important is from the spiritual side of the house, one of the biggest things is recognizing that, you know, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And it's like we have to give ourselves that freedom to say this is important and I don't want to fill it with more things. And it comes down to the anxiety, the filling of it on the one side spiritually is it's a trust. You know, that when the Sabbath was originally given, we didn't have a lot of the luxuries that we have now of pre-made meals, clothes off the rack in a store. I mean, people had to butcher their animals. They had
showers.
To tend their crops. Yeah. They had to bring the water in from the well multiple times a day. They had to, you know, kids grow. So mom was always, in every spare minute she had, sewing new clothes. You know, there's always something to do. Bread had to be made. And when they took that Sabbath off, it was saying, okay, God, I trust you to do what I can't do. I trust that you're going to take care of the animals. You're going to provide. That's why Jesus said, seek the kingdom above all these things. He said, these things dominate the thoughts of unbelievers. But for believers, we're supposed to seek the kingdom first, and then all these things fall into place. So it's an opportunity to trust God. So it's that heart attitude. But one of the things that is kind of funny to me, how we've really gotten off track with this idea of recreation. You know, the root of that's recreation.
That's right.
And, you know, when I started off in school, I actually was a leisure major, and we studied the psychology of how people have fun. And it's fascinating to me that we all recreate ourselves, we recreate in different ways. For somebody, it might be reading a book, even if it's a heavy book like theology or academia, if that's what gets them excited, that's restorative. For other people, it's doing, you know, getting out and doing woodworking in the shed. For others, it might be hiking. It doesn't have to be laying on the couch or the hammock, because that's not restorative. It's not recreative for everybody. So knowing what your thing is to fill that Sabbath time with is just as important.
No, I like where you're going with that. There are certain, very much so, like some people may have a little garden that they like to work in, and there's strong data that's very restorative, healing, very peaceful. But others, that could be like farming, and it's work, and it would be not something to be done on the Sabbath. So the specific activity isn't so much prescribed, in my view, but is the activity something that is restorative to you in your relationship with your Creator, drawing you closer to Him? And there's strong data that getting out in nature, God put them in a garden to start with, and multiple data shows you get time in nature, away from the urban setting, you know, like we have here on our campus, it lowers cortisol levels, it lowers your blood pressure, lowers your heart. Just being in that environment is actually relaxing to your physiology and your mindset. So being out, doing something in the natural setting is very helpful. Conversely, though, there's other activities that you might enjoy doing that is actually not restorative, one of them being screen media time, particularly theatrical. And when I say screen media time, if somebody, the theatrical entertainment, these are entertainments rather than educational. Watching a sermon because you can't make it to church, and so you're watching your church on your screen. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about the stuff that is designed to entertain you, and that stuff neurobiologically activates your emotion circuits, whether it's laughter, whether it's stress, worry, fear, whatever. It activates emotion circuits while simultaneously suspending activity in prefrontal cortex. So it causes neurobiological upregulation of the anxiety, and is not restorative to you. Okay, it's actually harmful neurobiologically. So I would say, you know, theatrical programming, primarily on the Sabbath hours, if you're wanting to do something recreational. But maybe if you're watching a one of our podcasts, and I mean, this could be potentially, if it was helping you learn something that was stimulating you and helping your perspective of God, or and many, you know, in the programs I've done, we've had people tell us that their hearts are uplifted. So spiritual things coming through a device is okay.
So something informational, or, you know, like a how-to video, a documentary, something like that, that's informing and you know, making your mind work in a different area, not the theatrical.
But as long as it's not in my view, it is not pursuing, what's the word I want to use here? Something that's a work to you, a burden to you.
Something you're interested in.
A hobby, something you're interested in, something that is something that may honor God even, okay? Sure. But if it's more along the lines of, okay, I've got to get this done, I'm going to look at this video next week because I've got to do it for my job next Thursday.
That's
you're not resting, you're working.
That's right.
That's not a rest, and that's the point.
What about like cell phones, that kind of stuff? Like, you know, how do we, I guess that maybe this is more related to boundaries, but a lot of the encroachment on rest time are not always the big things like, oh, we've got to go help my neighbor move. That's something planned and scheduled. It's the, I'm sitting down to rest and then this happens. How do we establish those healthy rhythms and boundaries to keep that? I mean, what's the clinical guidance for that kind of stuff in a healthy way? Because I don't know about you, I can sit down at the phone and or sit on the couch and I can get a text message or a phone call from a patient or whatever, or a work thing, and all of a sudden I got an email to check, and all of a sudden an hour or two of my day off is gone. How do we do that kind of stuff in a healthy way?
Well, it's different depending on what your role is. So for me, patients do not have access to my information. I do not get contacted outside of work.
Mm.
For you, that's different. I know you have to be on call, so to speak. So.
Yeah, no, so you're exactly right. I think each person has to define that. There's not a set structure. Some people I know will set a certain hours of the day where they go and check their emails. And the emails wait until those hours of the day. The mindset is, this device is to serve me. I'm not to serve it.
Yep.
Whereas other, because the devices were designed to actually free us, but what's happened is they've worked to actually enslave us, because you never get away anymore. Mm-hmm. people wherever they're going, ding, 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 and I see people checking their emails everywhere. I don't check emails or anything but my computer. I don't do them on my phone. I don't do them on my iPad. When I'm traveling, people will have to wait until I get somewhere and then can check my email. So I only do that. I don't need that. It's like I don't get mail to my house until I get home and open the mailbox.
Yep.
And then I answer my mail. So that's a boundary I set. But other people, there might be. Now, there were times in my life, I remember when I applied to med school, I was waiting for that letter. I was checking my mailbox every day, checking my mailbox. There might be something you're really waiting on that you're eagerly, that's fine. That's a one-off. That's not what you're doing your whole life on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So exceptions don't make rules, actually prove the rule.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I guess I see with myself and with other people is that a lot of times when they take time for self-care, whether that's a Sabbath rest or dedicating 2 hours of my day, okay, I'm off the clock and now I'm going to rest at the end of the day, and when they do something for themselves, they feel guilty. They feel like, oh, I'm not worthy of this. I've got all these things I should be doing. I feel guilty I'm not doing the laundry. I feel guilty I'm not mowing the grass. How do we overcome those kinds of, oh, I shouldn't do self-care because I'm not worth it, or they feel guilty because of it?
Yeah, the question that I like to ask is, okay, who told you that? Where did you get that from? Mm-hmm. And that can kind of lead to where that belief originated.
And that has the roots in two elements. One is the idea of worth and value. Where does that come from?
Yes.
But another also has to do with not understanding how reality works and duty. I don't, you know, this idea, well, when you love others, you sacrifice for them. And
the greatest love is to lay down your life for someone
right.
else.
And so how can I be taking? And so I use, and this is where they don't understand reality. This is what we just talked about. Love your neighbor as yourself. Your first duty, what's the first commandment? That's the second. What's the first?
Love God with all you got.
With all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Yep. So your first duty is to present yourself to God in the best condition for the greatest usefulness possible. Mm-hmm. Many people miss this. This is how the devil tricks them. Love others to the point that you enfeeble yourself so you can't even be useful to God anymore.
Yep.
And so their first duty is to establish these routines of life that maintain their vibrancy and resiliency so that they can be helpful to other people. One of the examples I give would be the farmer who wants to help feed hungry people of the world. And so he's going to donate all of the produce from his farm to and not take any for self. He won't even eat one meal a day because he wants to be so selfless. How many does he feed in the end? None, because he starves to death.
Yep.
And so when it comes to the aspects of self-care, there has to be a routine self-care that maintains your wellness, and then all the abundances of life you can certainly share with people, but only from a place of wellness first. And that is a principle. So that's what I would say to people. Where people, one of the vulnerable things that your comment triggered in my mind, I want to throw it out there. Who are the ones vulnerable to this burnout? The ones vulnerable seems to me, I mentioned the conscientious person a moment ago, but the empathic person, the person who sees other people having some burden and gets uncomfortable if they don't help relieve it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore they take on stuff, more and more stuff that's not theirs.
Yep.
More and more stuff. And this is another principle of reality. God gives us the strength each day, if we're faithful and trusting him, to fulfill the duties he gives us. He does not give us the strength to fulfill the duties for other person's lives.
Yeah.
And so a pastor years ago did an acted out, had in his church an acted out object lesson that I remember. It's been at least probably 30 years ago that I saw this. Mm-hmm. And I still remember it, and I use it from time to time with my patients, and I'm going to share this acted out object lesson. And if you were in the church, what you would see is that there was a man on the stage, and he has a red wagon, and he's talking to the Lord. Lord, you have blessed me with so many blessings, healthy family, good health. I just want to give my life. You want to serve you, Lord. What can I do for you? And through the PA, you hear the deep voice go, "Son, do you see that marble at your feet? Will you put that in your wagon and carry it for me?" So he picks up this little marble, puts it in his wagon. And then he starts to walk through the church. And the first little section down by the church, another actor is there. And that person's holding a big boulder. And they have a conversation about dinner. And, well, I hadn't seen you in a while. And then pretty soon he goes, "Oh, you know, this boulder, my shoulders are hurting so bad. Would you mind if I put this in your wagon?" And so he puts it in the wagon. And this happens to a second, third, fourth. Pretty soon the wagon is filled with boulders. And he's pulling it and he's going, "Oh, Lord, my life is such a burden. I'm so tired. I'm so worn out. Why have you burdened me like this?" And you hear the voice, "Son, I only asked you to carry a marble." Mm-hmm. And then he goes back around and hands everybody back their boulders. And he's now happy pulling his little marble through life.
And they're mad at him.
That might be. That might be that they're mad at him. That's right. But that is the people who have difficulty setting boundaries and feel emotionally responsible. They're either feeling responsible for somebody else's welfare, or they derive their own sense of well-being from how other people feel or think towards them.
Yeah.
And thus they're easily manipulated into taking on burdens so people won't get mad at them.
Yep.
And I want people to recognize that their responsibility is to God first, not to make other people happy first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing God's will and somebody else doesn't like it, then your responsibility is to give them the freedom not to like you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still love them. It's okay. You don't have to like me. I'm going to love you anyway.
Yep.
And I'm not going to do that for you because I love you.
Yep.
And you need, you'll never gain strength. You'll never gain mastery if I'm doing that for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the, you know, and that connects to, you know, the, when you said that, the verse that came to mind that I'm sure you're familiar with is the, you know, Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary, heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." And that's the echo of the promise that God wanted to give rest to his people. And, you know, Jesus proved himself he's God. But he says something really interesting there. He says, you know, "For my burden is easy and my yoke is light." And while, of course, we can apply that metaphor to the farm animal that has a literal yoke, but culturally, every rabbi would have their teaching, their specific kind of focus on the scripture, whether they, you know, a specific part of the law of Moses, a specific, you know, commentary on a section of scripture, and they would call that their yoke. That was their specialization. That was their teaching to other people. And so every rabbi would have their yoke, and Jesus would say, "My yoke, right, is different from the other yokes. My burden is easy. My yoke is light." That all the other religious leaders had bound them with 613 rules in the law of Moses, and they were so persnickety about keeping all of them that they added extra rules. You read like the Targums and the Talmud and all these different commentaries. They had added extra rules to keep them from breaking the rules. So, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands.
Yep.
And Jesus wanted to clarify the whole point. That's what the Sermon on the Mount was all about, was saying, hey, this is not meant to burden you. It's actually meant to bless you. And when we see all the things we have to do for God, even Sabbath, even church stuff, even Christian faith stuff can become a burden. Oh, I've got to read my Bible or I'm not a good Christian. Oh, I've got to spend all this time in prayer. God doesn't love me. And it's a twisting of reality that actually makes it far more stressful and anxiety-inducing when we don't understand the way it's supposed to
work. I want to pick up on what you said because it was brilliant and you're right on. And that metaphor of a yoke, I want to unpack that even a little farther and contrast the yoke of the Pharisees and the yoke of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
A yoke, and for those who don't know and haven't been raised on a farm, is not a bridle. It's not a bit. It does not lead. It does not control. A yoke is that piece of wood that goes on the shoulders of the two oxen often, and its function is to share the burden. The burden is shared between the two.
That's right.
And Christ says, "Take my yoke upon you." And the metaphor, object lesson with Christ, and I'm going to tell you what the yoke is in a moment, but the object lesson is that you cannot succeed in life in your own strength.
Mm.
And God never asks you to carry the burdens alone in your own strength. He is telling you, take the yoke of Christ, and you will have divine strength for all of the burdens that are his for you to carry.
Mm-hmm.
It would be you and him together. But Christ can't. And so we think about the plan of salvation. You cannot save yourself alone without Christ. But, as the chapel, can Christ save anybody alone without that person? Without their cooperation, without their choice? It's a joint effort.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cooperative, yoked together. And the yoke is the yoke of love and trust.
That's right.
We're yoked with him with love. And the Pharisees yoked with rules and fear. Mm-hmm. Rules and fear of punishment. Human law. Here are the rules. Obey the rules or else punishment. That's the yoke. And life became a burden. Anxiety. Did I do it right? Did I get this done? Was I too late to get that done? Did I have too many gnats in my drink still? Whatever. It's always fear. Did I miss something?
Yeah.
Love and trust. And you think about the responsibilities of life. If you're doing something, read the Bible, you said. Law. I've got to read so many verses today. Okay, I'm just so tired, though, but I don't want to get in trouble. I guess I'll read those verses. Verses, I love God. And if you've ever been in love and you got a letter from the person you love, it is not a burden to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you read it repeatedly.
Yep.
Until you can be with them again.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it's love, it's easy to read that. It's fun to read that. You look forward to reading that. When it's law, it's heavy, it's drudgery, mm-hmm. it's hard. And that is the difference. And that's what Paul, the whole New Testament, talks about, is the difference between obedience of faith, which is trust, love and trust, versus the obedience of law. Mm-hmm. Only the obedience of love and trust actually heals.
Yep.
And so, to your question, yes, this is how we handle the burnout, is we engage with our Creator in a love-trust relationship. That's first. Yes?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then we're not alone. It's not our strength.
Yeah. I want to connect this back to maybe some of our listeners that are already at the point of burnout, of exhaustion, where they want to engage in these things. They want to read the Bible, but maybe they're so exhausted that they struggle to even start. What advice would you give to them?
So one of the things we talk about in here is the law, design for more, is mm-hmm. the laws of God, or design laws, how reality works.
Yep.
Two of them are that are real important for our growth and development. One is the law of exertion. If you want something to get stronger, you must exercise it, because if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. On that's mental, everything else. But the corollary to that, it's always correlate, always the other side of that, is after finite beings, which we are, who do not have infinite power and energy, after we expend energy, it's the law of restoration. We must rest and recover. If we don't rest and recover, we will burn out. This is a law of our being.
Yep.
It's how reality works. So a pitcher for a Major League Baseball team pitches a no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
They will not pitch the next night. They must rest and recover, or it's they destroy their arm and they can't, and they ruin themselves.
Yep.
And so this is so understanding this law, it's not a rule. It is just how reality works, that people, if they're on the position of burnout, they can't, then you need to look at at rest. You need rest. You need restoration. You need to disengage. You need to make sure you're getting good sleep. You need to remove yourself from some of the responsibilities and burdens. Take a sabbatical from your job. Resign from the boards at your church, or whatever it is that's burning you out, that has overextended you, and get back in harmony with your limitations. Again, one of Satan's traps, because we're finite beings, we'll have limits. If he can't get you to do evil, he'll tempt you to take more on than you're really physiologically and emotionally, mentally capable of doing all at once. Another metaphor I like to give, and your responsibility is to actually prayerfully and intelligently and truthfully recognize those limitations and set healthy boundaries.
Yep.
But one of the metaphors I like to give is this. Healthy adults have the ability to walk, to jog, to run, and to sprint. Four different speeds. You can do that. And if you saw your child across the yard fall into your swimming pool and start to drown, you will sprint.
Mm-hmm.
But how long can you sprint? If you got a cell phone call that your child fell into a swimming pool 4 miles away, will you sprint for 4 miles? Mm-hmm. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can sprint. Okay. But how long could you walk? And if you train, maybe you could jog.
Yep.
But it takes some training to do that.
Yep.
This is a metaphor for how much we can put on ourselves. And many people will allow themselves to try to go into what we call emergency mode, which is that sprint mode, that is there just for true emergencies. Your loved one has been in an accident or having a heart attack, and so you're in the ER with them through the night and maybe in the ICU for 5 days or something. Mm. This is sprint mode, emergency mode. You're doing lots of things out of your routine now.
Yep.
But that can't be sustained. Mm-hmm. And so some people will have a loved one with Alzheimer's dementia. They'll bring them home. And it's not 5 days in an ICU. This is now months, years. Yeah. And they're still trying to do sprint mode. You can't do sprint mode. You will burn out. And so there are realities that people have to step back and go, okay, it doesn't matter how much I want to sprint 4 miles. I can't sprint 4 miles.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not about hard attitude. And this is where coming to some truth-based reality assessment of the situation and guarding oneself from being tempted to get stuck in the overextension mode of life.
Yeah.
I think this is people can do this. It would protect a lot of people from burnout. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. So learning that restoration, healthy routines of life, and then sprinting only for the reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. And then if you realize the problem is going to persist, you're going to need to get help in there.
Yep.
To help carry that load because you can't do it all.
Absolutely.
Just carry the marble.
Yeah. This the marble that the Lord gave you. Yeah. So thank you for joining us today. If you have questions, send those to questions@designformore.net, questions@designformore.net. And if you'd like more resources, check out the website, comeandreason.com, comeandreason.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Designed for More, brought to you by Come and Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts for more inspiring content.